You're listening to the Jason Gregor Show podcast, brought to you by Lakewood Chev. The 2017 Equinox clearance is on right now. $8,000 off MSRP on all units. The 2018s are also here, so check it out at lakewoodchev.com. Let's get to our big guest of the day, brought to you by Shatified. For the best straight razor shaves and stylish haircuts in the city, walk-ins are welcome at 4 Edmonton area locations. Get Shatified at Shatified.com. Kevin Woodley from In Goal Magazine and NHL.com joins us. Last night, people are freaking out over the goaltending early. Gibson, probably have a goal back here or there. And you've talked at length since the playoffs started that he is not a guy who technically is great. He's got a very unique stance. At times he reaches. He's odd in the fact that he goes better to his blocker than he does to his glove hand. What did you make of Pekka Rinne on, I think it was the second Silverberg goal, where he didn't even read the cross ice pass from the corner and Silverberg's he didn't even move.
Yeah. I mean, that's one where, he lost that one, but it just looked to me like lost the puck carrier, lost it behind the screen. There was sort of him and a defenseman, or an opponent and a defenseman in front of him. So they kind of create a double screen, loses the puck. And the instinct at times when you lose sight of it is to go to your knees, because then nothing's going to go in along the ice, right? Like, you've got that taken care of. And even if a guy throws the puck at the net through a sharp angle, you've got that, he's got to pretty much pick a corner on you, especially when you're as big as Pekka. You've got that taken care of. And, he doesn't see that off the stick. He doesn't see the pass come through. He just does not see it. And you could argue that at his size, you'd like to see him. And ironically, he tends, or has in the past, tended to play sharp angle shots and dead angle plays from his skates more. And at times it's actually cost him, because the transition to the ice creates some holes that have been exploited on him. But at his size, you like to see him maybe battle a little more, look over that screen, find a way to look around that screen. But, once he loses sight, he takes away to the bottom of the net and they're able to thread a pass through a seam. And the blame goes both ways there. The goalie's got to fight for the sight line, maybe be a little more patient. And that's a pass you do not want to see getting through, and a guy you don't want to see that open as he was on the back door. So plenty of game blame to go around on that one. I thought last night, if there's a goal I don't like, it's maybe the first one on Vatanen, for a couple of reasons on Rinne. One, he badly overplays, and Vatanen talked about this. If you watch, as Vatanen comes down the wing, Pekka comes out, and it's almost like a little hop step over to his left. Like, he's on angle, and he takes a jumpy little step and actually loses his net. I mean, low blocker, it was a good shot, and Rinne goes into sort of a blocking mode before reacting out with the blocker. And again, that's a sign he's not feeling great that night when that's the reaction. But he's totally lost his net. And Vatanen talked about how he saw space far side blocker, and it was there because Pekka was not centered. He was not in the middle. He did not have his angle. And to me, that's troubling, A, because, hey, it's never good, but B, it's that little extra step, that little extra movement that to me is a sign of sort of the old Pekka and the one who struggled with consistency. And that's a goaltender who is overactive for his size and tends to move a little too much and get a little over-aggressive and just, for lack of a better term, can look a little jittery in there. And I thought there were signs of that. Now, the difference, I don't know if you saw the guy who runs InGoal's Twitter account last night had a nice little tweet with the play where Gibson is literally lying on his side for like 30 or 40 seconds, just sort of like flicking his leg up, and then our InGoal Twitter guy clipped it and gifted it and put it out there as rare footage of John Gibson trying out for a chorus line. Flopping a lot and down early and overextended and all the things we talked about going into that Edmonton series. Now, the difference between the two is that's when they're not at their best. But Pekka's trying to get that extra movement out of his game. He's actively making that effort. This is who John Gibson is. And if you can extend him laterally, get him behind on plays, he's going to end up on his back, on his belly, or on his side doing scissor kicks. And, I've read a lot of things about how John Gibson is doing this and doing that, and he's back on form. But I'm sorry, anytime I see a goalie resort to that as early and as often in sequences as John Gibson does, the only reason he's able to survive that is because of the defensive support in front of him. And listen, the kid's got a lot of incredible athleticism, and he tracks pucks on clean shots as well as maybe as well as anyone, but he tracks in his movement as poorly as anyone. As a matter of fact, he doesn't. And so it's going to be really interesting to see because Pekarinen, he may not find it again. This may be the start of a down cycle that we've seen over the years, and he may start chasing plays, and he may get overactive, and he may get behind. But the difference is I really believe he'll try and get back to the other thing, whereas this is what John Gibson is and will probably always be. And it'll be really interesting to see if they win a cup this way, because then it'll never change. And if you don't have the support he has in front of him defensively, I'm sorry, but it's exposable.
Kevin Woodley from InGoal Magazine and NHL.com joined us. So if you're the Predators, how do you expose it in games 3 and 4?
Well, I would... A couple things that I saw them doing that I thought the Oilers did really well earlier in their series. And listen, exposing it, finding ways to expose it and being able to do it against that defense are two different things. But I liked, you saw that they were off the rush. Rather than trying to beat him with clean shots, they were forcing him wide and looking for wraparounds. I thought he was back to some of the habits that we saw early in that series against the Oilers that they were able to exploit in terms of, as that play turns from a rush to a wrap down around the goal line, he's stranded outside of his posts. The Predators tried to beat it by beating him around the net to the other side of the post. And again, if you're stuck outside of your short side post, say by a foot and a half, that's an extra foot and a half you've got to get back and recover to beat the play to the other post. And the attacking forward's got all the speed, and you've got to back up and rotate and shift and make a big push. That's how they tried to attack it. The fact he was getting caught out there, I'd do what the Oilers were doing, throw it back in his feet on the short side because he's not watching it at that point. He's just a giant mess of counter rotation and twisting the other way. The other thing I would do is, and we talked about this with the Oilers, on the power play, make him move, especially to that glove side. Couple of quick passes back and forth and quick shots. His deficiencies, his technical deficiencies, are most evident in his movement. And as the play speeds up laterally, he gets behind. And he'll still has the ability to make, and we saw it against Edmonton, where he will make that, you know, sprawling extended save on a one-timer on a play. He recovers enough to make that save. But at that point, because he was behind in the first place, he's done. He's got nothing left but to lie on his side. And again, he scrambles as well as anyone. But the entire top half is exposed. And that, I thought that sequence last night, as well as the Ducks defended it and Nashville wasn't able to get anything through, he literally for 30 seconds lay on his side and all he had left was to reach his hand up or do scissor kicks along the ice. It was kind of funny because some people, you know, on Twitter, there were some big names that kind of picked it up and made jokes about old school. But the reality is it's exposed. And if you can get that shot through anywhere in the top half of the net, it's a goal. And I just see too much of that from him.
Kevin Woodley from InGoal Magazine and NHL.com joins us. We discuss goaltenders. Ben Bishop, $4.9 million for the next few years with the Dallas Stars. You've talked a lot about systems working with goaltenders. Does Dallas's current system work with their goaltender and Bishop, or do you expect it to change with the new coach?
That's the question. I think it has to change because I've got to be honest with you. The system that was in there with Lindy Ruff doesn't work for any goaltender. And this is where this becomes an interesting move. I don't think there's any question that internally and maybe with the players, they needed to make a move to sort of boost the confidence level, for lack of a better term, the guys playing in front of the goaltenders. But when you break it down 5-on-5 in terms of shot quality, again, as much as we can measure it based on location and a few other things like rebounds and rush and the public information, as much as you can trust it from the NHL.com play-by-play, Kari Lehtinen 5-on-5 was really good this year. As a matter of fact, he was better than Ben Bishop. And so this is where this gets interesting. Lehtinen's struggles were all behind a terrible power play. A penalty kill, so it was all against opposing power plays, and it was all based on them just giving up way, way too many looks. So To say that the system is going to fit Ben Bishop better, I can't, because I don't think there's any chance that you're going to see them play with as structure as they did behind Lindy Ruff defensively. I think you'll see better structure there. I mean, that's been the MO of Hitchcock coach teams. I know it disintegrated when he changed the system in St. Louis this year for the first half before he was let go there. But frankly, I don't expect him to use that same type of system. I think that was more a move to recapture the attention of a team that it frankly had tuned him out. So it's kind of hard to say. I think Bishop's style is one that, for the most part, fits behind, you know, most coaches. And like, he's not a guy who's bad against the rush, per se. You know, like in Carolina, where they give up a lot of rush chances, or you're not busy for long periods of time. Those type of factors I don't think are going to affect him, maybe like they would other ones. The only thing I will say is, and I don't think they'll do this in Dallas, I don't think Ben Bishop would be a good fit, say, behind a John Tortorella coach team, one that really collapses in front of the net and creates a ton of traffic down low, because Ben is a guy who really does rely on seeing releases. For a lot of talk about him using his size, he's actually not overly technical. He's a guy that tends to reach and open up, and I think at times that's led to some of the soft tissue injuries that we've seen for him. He puts extra stress on his body because he doesn't track the puck necessarily well through the release. He relies on reading it off the release and then reacts purely to it. And at times opens the net, but his reactions are so good that he's able, and his body is so big, he's able to get away with it. So as long as they're not going to play a real collapsing style system that never allows him to see those shots, or that creates a lot of loose puck scrambles on plays where it never gets through to him, you know, so he can't feel the rebound or have a sense of where it's going, he would get stranded, I think, at the top of his crease, or get a little lost in that kind of system. So anything other than that, though, I think he'll be fine. Still don't like the term, but at $4.9 million and for a team that needed to make a move, you can't say you're surprised. And it's hard to argue it's necessarily going to be a bad one, at least for the next 2 years.
Kevin, Lauren Brossoit, some Oilers fans are wondering, oh, geez, Vegas might take him. Played well down the stretch. The problem for me that I see, well, not problem, but I guess the benefit for the Oilers is Lauren Brossoit needs to clear waivers next season for the first time in his career. And there's a lot of other teams, specifically Columbus, who have some young goalies who don't require waivers. If you're Vegas, do you think when it comes down to after a guy who you think's a starter, and I don't think they're picking Brossoit to be that just yet, that they're likely going to be looking at the waiver wire factor?
Yeah, I think that is going to be a factor. I think there are enough, like, you know, and we've talked about it before, I like LB as a backup for them next year in Edmonton. There's a lot of things I really like about his game. And so this isn't in any way disrespectful to him, but I don't see him being on their radar. And that's because there are other guys that both they might see. From a style standpoint, too, I think Vegas will go for a little rawer, more athletic guy as opposed to a guy with more of a – that relies more on a technical foundation like LB does. And there's some really high-end guys out there that Vegas is going to have the option on that don't have to clear waivers. And so if you're Vegas, you know, we've heard the rumblings about Fleury maybe being an option there. When you look at some of the guys that they're going to have, you know, a shot at here, well, it's whether it's a Philip Grubauer, an Antti Raanta in a backup role, who is a guy they could bring in and then also use as trade bait later on because other teams are going to want that kind of guy. To me, when you get in beyond that layer, you're looking more at the Korpisalos, Jonas Korpisalo from Columbus, Anton Forsberg from Columbus. You know, Korpisalo is a guy that you could have. He's got legitimate high-end number one upside, and a lot of people believe that. Not only could you have him if you picked him as a third goaltender in Columbus, and he probably should be ready to play for you, but you could have him and stash him in the minors for another year without having to worry about him clearing waivers. So when you go down the list, I think that guys like that are more likely to be picked just based on upside and where they're at in their careers and that waiver factor, but also style fit. You know, the goalie coach development guy there, Dave Pryor, when you look at his track record in Washington. Some of the guys he picked when he was the goalie coach there or had a hand in them drafting. Holtby, who was really raw and athletic. Varlamov, who, you know, was just explosive athleticism, but not a lot of structure. A Neuvirth, a little smaller, but a little more composed. But that style of goaltender, that's kind of where I think they'll probably head. And I just think there are guys who, like you said, don't have to clear waivers. Maybe are seen on the outside as having even higher upside. It's a pretty deep list in goal that they're going to have the ability to select from. And like I said, it's a good news, I think, if you're the Edmonton Oilers. I don't think you have to worry about losing Laurent Lassois to the expansion draft this summer.
Right now, if you are Vegas, who would be the first goal you pick and why?
Well, I mean, I just finished extolling the virtues of Corpus Salo. I think the game is headed towards patience on the skates.
Okay.
And he has that. And then I know he's had a rough world championships and you know, maybe he does get past. He just has a ton of upside, especially from his patience is incredible. He's got pretty good structure in his game. He's got sort of the prototypical Finnish hands, excellent glove, good blocker. There's a lot to like about Jonas Korpisalo. He's a guy that would be high on my radar. Philip Grubauer, he was there when Dave Pryor was with the Washington Capitals. Would not be surprised at all if that's another guy they go after. And then, you know, those are kind of high on my list. And it really depends beyond that what they're looking for. Do they want to just go young, or do they want somebody who has some experience? Because we've seen that with younger guys. It's nice to have a playing partner that's been there and done that a little bit. And so do you look at a Marc-Andre Fleury, or do you look at a Jimmy Howard, who seems to be getting lost in a lot of this talk that's focusing on Fleury? Coming off a great season, having a good World Championships, made very specific changes to his game that I think are going to play well for him moving forward. Like, I don't think this year's a blip for Jimmy Howard. As long as he can stay healthy, and we've talked about it before, there's questions there. I believe the changes he made in his game could produce long-term success for him. He's been there. He's got the experience. And if I'm Vegas and I'm Dave Pryor and I like mobile, really good, strong skaters, Jimmy Howard checks all those boxes. You know, as much as Fleury also fits that mold, I wouldn't sleep on Jimmy Howard as an option here, because I think as Detroit moves to younger, they're big on Jared Carreau, who's on a run in the playoffs in the AHL this year, and Peter Mrazek as well. So Howard becomes an odd man out there.
Which American League goaltender do you think is poised to have a breakout year at the NHL next year?
Ooh, that's a good one. I would say, I hate to keep going back to it, but I guess he can't count Korpisalo because he finished the year in Columbus. But he is a guy, obviously, as you can tell, I'm pretty high on Jonas Korpisalo. I don't know that he's going to get the chance this year, ironically. But Eric Comrie is a name I've talked about several times over the past couple of years as a guy who is ready for who is still young and, yes, could still use time to continue to develop. But I just believe his game is NHL-ready. And I could see him taking a step beyond that. Zane McIntyre, who is on a run in the American Hockey League and yet couldn't win a game in Boston this year when he got the call up. That's one that, I got to be honest, Jason, that left me scratching my head. I mean, he is, as a second-year pro, tearing up the American Hockey League this year. And yet when he got called up, just could not make it translate at the NHL level. And I'm surprised by that, because when I watch his game, there's a lot to like. And the last one I'll throw out there, and again, I think he's probably 2 years away from getting an opportunity, but we've seen some good things and heard some great things about Charlie Lindgren, who, you know, for all the talk about Zach Fucale with the Montreal Canadiens over the years, has surpassed him on their depth chart quite quickly after signing as a college free agent last season.
Kev, as always, great stuff, man. We appreciate it. Enjoy the games tonight and this week, and we'll get into goalie drafts a little bit in the next few weeks, too.
Okay. Well, we got to get me on with Strutty, too, because me and him both had at it with Spectre over with Mark over his proposal to cut the top half of the goalie stick off above the hands and kill goalies playing the puck.
Yeah, so. I was joking with Speck. I sent him a deep message. I said, don't tweet and drink. It's never good.
Yes. There we go. I think we're all on the same page.
Yeah, well, the thing is, though,
all in good fun.
Well, I was surprised actually. Struds would have wanted to get that handle off because he would have wanted to get. Now there's less chance of anybody on the ice handling the puck worse than him, so that's not good.
I like one. Well, I'll throw one out to you, and this is what I didn't realize. For all the talk about, and I get it with Pekarinen because he does have the ability to handle, and he stops more pucks than anyone, and that's a big part of Nashville's transition. But the ironic thing about everyone who sees Pekarinen and starts screaming, let's take measures to prevent goalies from handling the puck, is when you start to look at some of the analytics work that really breaks it down, goalies, when they stop the puck and then play it forward in their own zone, lead to significantly less clean breakouts and significantly more turnovers, which is what Mark evidently wants out of dump-ins, than just letting a defenseman handle it himself. So in other words, more for all the Pekarinens out there, there's more goalies that screw it up and actually create offense the other way because they can handle the puck. Cough, cough, Craig Anderson.
Kev, we'll talk to you next week. Have a good one.
Okay, take care.
Kevin Woodley from In Goal Magazine and NHL.com.